The Vienna Philharmonic under Andras Nelsons. That was the Slavonic Dance in E minor by Antonín Dvořák. You're listening to Sunday Night at the TSO. I'm Kathleen Kajioka. Audiences of all ages can enjoy that Dvořák dance, as well as music to move to from many cultures, as part of the Young People's Concert Let's Dance, happening May 24th. But ahead of this, on April 19th, the TSO's Young People's Concert Series continues with a symphonic experience like no other. The multidisciplinary work She Holds Up the Stars is a Red Sky production based on the award-winning novel by Sandra Larrand. Now, it's the author herself who has written, created, and directed this adaptation, which brings together indigenous storytelling, theater, large-scale puppetry, and live orchestral music performed by members of the TSO, with music and sound design by Elliot Britton, and it makes its world premiere. Now, I am very keen to hear more about this, and there's no one better to fill us in than the author and creator who joins me now. Sandra Larrand, welcome to Sunday Night at the TSO.
Thank you so much.
She Holds Up the Stars is a beautiful, evocative title. What's the spirit behind it or within it?
Well, you know, that is a good question. And I invite audiences to come and see why it was named She Holds Up the Stars. And it would be such a giveaway if I actually just answered that question.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, we don't want any spoilers, but okay, no. So to be revealed. Now, This is a story that began as a novel. When did you first realize that it wanted to live beyond the page?
Right from the very beginning. I've always wanted to see this on stage in front of a live audience. And I'm a very visual writer. Because I come from the world of the performing arts, it's not a big leap for me to think in terms of stage performance and how words come off the page and are embodied and shared with an audience.
Okay, so it's right in the seeds of the initial creation.
Mm-hmm. But you know how I started writing this is I was up on Lake Temagami, where I'm from, and I was, you know, just starting to write the novel, and this big storm happened. And I was alone on an island. And I thought, now I'm writing about a storm in the novel. So maybe I'll just go out into the storm. And so I went out into the storm, out to the end of the dock. And I just stood there. And it was lightning and thundering, you know, that big, deep sort of rumble sound that's coming. And then I saw all these flashes, like flashes of lightning on the trees and on the rock and on the water. And then it just poured rain, and I could not see anything right in front of me, just pitch black. I was just out there in the elements, and I think it was this kind of energizing experience, and I went in and I wrote about it.
Oh, what an amazing start.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, because I was going to ask you, my understanding is about half the story comes from your lived experience, half is imagined, and I guess it's sort of the beginning of that marriage of two elements. But how else do memory and imagination work together in this piece?
Well, some of it is real, based on, you know, my life growing up in the North. Then it was just this wonderful opportunity to see where my imagination went. Either it wanted to spring forward into another direction, but based on something that was real, or something completely fictitious. When I talk to students and young adults and adults, older adults, they will say, what part is real and what part is fictitious? And I say, well, you guess. And then they come up with something. I said, no, that was fictitious. So it's great that they can't tell which is which. I love that. And when you write about something that you know, and you see the picture in your head, of course, you can climb into that beautiful detail and make it very rich and evocative and visual for somebody reading the book. So I love that place.
Can you tell us a little bit about the story, of course, without giving away too much?
Oh, yes. So the story is essentially about a young girl, an Indigenous girl, who is returning back to her homeland because she's searching for her mother's truth. People have given her piecemeal truth about her mother, but she wants to know the whole dynamic truth about her mother. She forges off to find out for herself. And when she comes to this community, she comes upon this man and his son breaking this horse. And it just incenses her that this is what you do to break an animal. It's just appalling to her. So she questions it. And right away, of course, she does not get along with this rancher boy because their worldviews are antithetical, so it seems. And then they have to get to know one another. And the horse is really that conduit for making it happen. And the horse really brings her to a place of finding her own heart.
Well, a big feature of this production is a life-size horse puppet. Mm-hmm. Such a powerful presence, that more like a moving sculpture, really. It's so beautiful. Mm. What can puppetry express that a human performer alone can't?
Well, it can do so many things that a human cannot, and it communicates on these magical and fantastical levels, you know, and it puppetry transcends, you know, language and differences. And as you mentioned, just the sheer scale and presence of this life-size horse. Actually, it's a little bit bigger than a life-size horse, and it can represent so many things. Puppets can also represent the other world and dreams and memory, both real and symbolic. And also, you know, because of the scale of that horse, it really allows for this very intricate motion. You know, for example, the pawing of the hoof, which we see the twitch of the ear, or how it can shift its energy. And so we see everything. Plus, we're going to be able to hear on a whole other sonic level, we're going to be able to hear the horse breathe because they're all inside the horse, except for one's on the head of the horse. One is in the heart of the horse, so inside the horse, and the other puppeteer is in the hind of the horse, so also inside the horse. But they can, you know, they breathe, they whinny, they bray, they scream. So it adds this whole other beautiful texture and sonic layer to the score. And that is all intended, of course.
Yeah, there are so many layers to this. There's the music, obviously, because we're at the TSO, but yeah, and there's the puppetry, there's the visual design, sound design. Was this the kind of vision that you had initially when you wanted to move this beyond a book, like all of these different layers?
I mean, it wasn't instant. I was sort of thinking, how would I put this on stage? And then I thought, puppetry, you know, oh, puppetry, the horse, that would be so beautiful. I basically did a bit of research, found one of the best puppet master designers in the world and wrote to him. We talked about the design of the puppetry. There's other puppets as well. For example, I wanted sort of a counterpoint to the gravitas of the horse. I wanted the boundless joy of a puppy, you know, so that they're really different creatures and something really light and fun. And the other one just majestic, and the raw power of a horse is felt. And then I thought, wouldn't it be different if it was like a orchestral version of this? You know, not just the theatrical version on stage, but that we bring in musicians and write. And because we've always worked with live music, and we have done a couple of shows in the past with the TSO. We've had a wonderful relationship with the TSO from day one. So it wasn't so unusual that I would think of that, because we've had such a great relationship. But I've never seen anything like this, so I'm really excited. I'm excited myself to see this on stage. <You know?
laughs> This being a large Indigenous-led production, as you say, on an orchestral stage with the TSO major orchestra, what does this kind of visibility mean to you, both personally and culturally speaking?
It means a lot. I don't think it's been done like this before, ever. So Canada is seeing something and special, and there's definitely a wonderful buzz about it already. I think sometimes Canadians don't always understand why there hasn't been a lot of Indigenous productions on stage. But to give a little bit of context here, it's been fairly recent, and it's one of the reasons why I started Red Sky in the first place, because I saw the gap. But also, our creative expression was actually outlawed in Canada. Outlawed until 1951, which meant our stories couldn't be told. Our dance forms couldn't be danced. Our spirituality had to go underground and away from the eyes of the colonial powers that be. Our language was forbidden. We were not allowed to travel in more than groups of three. And we had to return, and there was a whole pass system. You know, coming back to the res, you had to sign out and sign in like a punch card, you know. So all of that was banned in Canada till 1951. So here we are today creating Indigenous work, bringing something very unique to Canada and to the world, in spite of the attempts to diminish our voice, our creativity, our culture. It's like monumental to do something like this now.
Now, the work explores identity, belonging, relationship to the land. It is a young people's concert. So what are you hoping for young people in the audience, what they will carry with them after seeing this?
Yeah. And, you know, anything that we create for young audiences, adults love. They come out in droves, you know. So I hope audiences feel a real sense of belonging to the world at this time, especially, you know, and a belonging to the natural world. I hope that they see that the world is so much larger than that, what is beyond what is only human. I hope that audiences feel curious and stand up for when they see injustices done, and that they trust in their courage and in their heart, and that love is all around. It's not only to be found in human form. And we forget that sometimes as humans, you know?
Well, it sounds like an absolutely magical production. And I wish you all the best for this world premiere. And thank you so much for joining me to tell us all about it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me as a guest. I appreciate it. Chimigwich.
That was author, director, and founding artistic director of Red Sky Performance, Sandra LaRonde. The world premiere of She Holds Up the Stars takes place Sunday, April 19th, with 2 one-hour-long performances at 1 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. It's suitable for ages 8 and up. Get your tickets at tso.ca.